Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, February 1st, 2019. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, sometimes discuss Leaky Black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and we will preview the weekend's top games eventually. Games like North Carolina at Louisville, Kentucky at Florida, Texas Tech at Kansas, Indiana at Michigan State. But first, I want to spend a few minutes on Villanova, because I'm not sure how many people recognize exactly what Villanova has been doing lately. We talked a lot about Jay Wright's Wildcats when they got blasted by Michigan, when they lost to Furman, lost to Penn. So it's only fair to highlight how they've won nine straight games now. They're 8-0 in the Big East, and how they're doing it is especially impressive. Villanova is just straight killing folks from the three-point line. Here are the numbers from the past five games. Check this out. 12 of 27 from three in a 90-78 win at Creighton. 15 of 34 from three in an 85-75 win over Xavier. 12 of 26 from three in an 80-72 win at Butler. 17 of 42 from three in an 80-52 win over Seton Hall. 15 of 35 from three in an 86-74 win at DePaul. You add it up, and Villanova is 71 of 164 from three in its past five games. That's 43.3% while averaging 14.2 makes per contest. Norlander, you tell me, how tough is Villanova if it continues to shoot anywhere close to this the rest of this season? And are you ready to call the Wildcats a Final Four contender once again?
I'm getting pretty close there, Parrish. I've got him at 10th in my power rankings. I believe that is seven spots ahead of your daily top 25 and one. Villanova is doing what Jay Wright vowed to me that they would do. And I was a little skeptical when he said this in the preseason, but it's true. Those numbers are big, they're spectacular, and Villanova is now second to only the, I will not say gimmicky, but I will say, I don't even know what word I'd use. Savannah State runs an offense that is so three-point oriented, no team can possibly catch it. Villanova's on the heels, though. 53% of Villanova shots are three-pointers at this point. That's second in the country. Savannah State has actually have 58%, which is crazy. But that's been a big factor because they've gotten better at shooting the three. You know, people that listen to this podcast are not ignorant to the fact that Villanova was a tremendous three-point shooting team last season, both in accuracy and volume. Villanova made the more three-pointers in a single season than any team in college basketball history last season, and made more three-pointers in the NCAA tournament than any team in college basketball history. Trying to chase those numbers are the Wildcats, and just for reference, last season 47.5% of Villanova shots came from beyond the arc, so they're going even more in on this philosophy. It seems to be working out relatively well right now. Phil Booth, by the way, has kind of stepped up and been the player that I think Villanova fans thought he could be, but he's about 42% from three at this point and has been their most valuable overall player. And in their 9-0 stretch, by the way, Parrish, which starts with the win over UConn just before Christmas, and their last loss came close at Kansas, but since then they haven't lost. They're averaging 79.6 points in that stretch, so it's they've been on fire as of late, but overall the offense has really taken it up to another level, and they now rank top 10 in offensive efficiency.
And last season, they were number one in offensive efficiency, largely because of the way they shot the ball from beyond the arc. Do you have a sense for whether Jay Wright recruits shooting or develop shooting? Because they're clearly committed to putting up shots from beyond the three-point arc, and they're obviously very good at it. Last season had four different players shoot above 40% from three-point range. Right now, he's got three players shooting above 40%. That's Phil Booth, Colin Gillespie, and Joe Cremo. So this isn't just one guy or two guys getting up all the shots. They basically have four, and last season sometimes five, players who can shoot it from three-point range reasonably on any possession. Do you have a sense for whether he recruits shooters like this or gets them into the program and then develops into players who can do exactly what they're doing once again?
I think it is more recruiting than developing, but every coach will sell recruits on the development within the program and how we're going to make you better, obviously, of course. But Phil Booth was a solid three-point shooter coming into Villanova. Cremo as a grad transfer. Those who followed mid-major basketball and the University of Albany were aware of how good of a long-range threat that he was. So I think it's a lot of them pinpointing this and trying to build out their offense from their shooters. There's also a lot of freedom in the way Villanova runs its offense, and you know, unless they have changed things significantly this season, which I find to be highly unlikely. I remember leading up to the Final Four last season, one of the very interesting things about Nova was how free-flowing their offense was and how few sets they actually ran and how good they were because of it or in spite of it, however you want to frame that. It made their story all the more remarkable because basketball at the college level, I think it gets a little smarter, a little more advanced year by year in many different ways, and sometimes that can be with the kinds of sets and creativity that coaches want to run. And yet Jay Wright really simplified it last season, left it up to his players to, you know, acknowledge and develop and recognize reads on the floor, and they were better for it. Having a guy like Jalen Brunson was a big part of that, and now without him, they are finding a real groove here. Haven't lost in the Big East yet. It's them and Marquette, and then a huge gulf in that conference. But Villanova doesn't seem to be on the verge of taking a step back soon, because next two home games are Georgetown on Super Bowl Sunday here, then against Creighton, and we all basically wait for the road tilt against Marquette on Saturday, February 9th. That'll be one of maybe three must-watch games in the Big East the rest of the way. The only one that might qualify, frankly, is when Marquette tries to get its revenge win against St. John's.
As you point out, last season he had Jalen Brunson running thing. That's an incredible point guard who's now in the NBA, who was the National Player of the Year. And then he also had three other top 35 picks in the 2018 NBA draft. So, and we pointed this out before, in real time, I don't think people recognize just how talented Villanova was. But, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, after the draft, it was quite clear. Like, that was one of the more talented teams in the country. But they don't have that right now. And so I wonder, and I'm not comparing one to the other, but when the Warriors came out and started playing just a different game than the rest of the people in the NBA were playing, it actually changed the NBA. You know, and more teams than ever are shooting three-pointers at a higher rate than ever. And not everybody can do it like Golden State, because not everybody has Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but most franchises are now trying to do it. At what point do you think more high major programs commit to a similar style? Once upon a time, in some circles, you know, shooting too many three-pointers was considered a bad thing. I think now the bad thing is quite clearly not shooting enough.
Yeah, generally speaking, that is true. College coaches are more micromanaging than professional coaches. That's indisputable at this point. And you're gonna try and bring in guys into your program that can space and shoot it. And yet at the same time, like, you've got the aberrational things like Ethan Happ at Wisconsin, who can't do those things, and yet top five player of the year, and he can't shoot the three. It makes his story all the more interesting. I think this is still going to be push parish to where we're going to have power conference programs and teams shooting more threes. And if you just look at college basketball in general, I had something on this in the preseason in one of my stories. I can't reference the exact number. But anyway, college basketball has taken more three-pointers by the year annually, like GP, go back decades. There was one year where it had one weird dip, but otherwise more and more and more and more and more. More taken, more made. The season's going to set the record again. There's going to be more made three-pointers and more attempted three-pointers this season than ever before in the sport. So we're going to keep growing to that. And I do believe that it will not be this thing that expands infinitely like the universe. At least that's the theory. Do you think the universe is expanding, or do you think we're shrinking back in on ourselves, by the way, Parrish?
I don't know that I can have an intelligent opinion.
Okay,
about
I just figured I'd throw that out in the middle of my thoughts on Villanova and college basketball and the three-point shot at large. But anyway, there will be a bounce back, a pendulum swing. You know, three-pointers and its emphasis and its efficiency, that's never going to go away. But do I think that, you know, in the next 2 to 5 to 7 years, we'll look up and we'll see a Final Four team that isn't so reliant on three-pointers, that has a couple of really good 6'10 big men, and that might, you know, provide a commentary on there's not just one way to win? I think that is an inevitability.
So Villanova right now 8-0 in the Big East. Next up is a Sunday, early Sunday game at Georgetown. I believe that's at Georgetown.
No, Villanova's at home.
It is at home.
Yes.
So Sunday against Georgetown. at home, and then they get Creighton at home, and then, of course, the big one you referenced, February 9th at Marquette. That is the only game at Marquette that Villanova is projected by KenPom to be an underdog in going forward, at least until they get to, presumably, the NCAA tournament. We're going to preview some of the weekend's top games momentarily, but first, check this out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
So Sunday is pretty light because it's Super Bowl Sunday, but there are some good games scheduled for Saturday, so let's get into them now. Starting with the only matchup between two top 15 teams. That's number 9 North Carolina at number 15 Louisville, Saturday 2 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN. UNC is on a 4-game winning streak. Tar Heels have won 8 of their past 9 games, but you might remember, only loss in that stretch, 83-62 loss at home to this same Louisville team that's now on a 6-game winning streak. It was the worst home loss of Roy Williams' career since he's been at North Carolina. Norlander, Chris Max Cardinal is going to extend this winning streak to 7. Louisville going to get the regular season sweep of UNC, or is it payback time for the Tar Heels?
Oh, it's payback time, baby.
I think it's payback.
It's payback time. North Carolina's going to win this game. It's going to win this game. You know, you start every podcast now. You know, we sometimes talk about camel fighting. All right, we talked about it once.
But so, don't think I won't do it again. I'll do it now if you want to. We can get back to Louisville.
That's fine. And I think we've talked about Leaky Black once. But now
we want to talk about Leaky Black more.
Well, now we're going to talk. Now we sometimes talk about Leaky Black because we're going to talk about him right now.
Okay, good.
He's not, well, I mean, it's not that good. He's not going to play in this game. So without him on the floor, and they also don't have Sterling Manley, does North Carolina. They're more shorthanded, not as deep. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you're going to see Nasir Little continue to get more minutes, continue to play better, and he has really taken a step forward in a good way. Can you take a step forward in a bad way? I don't think so. But he's played better as of late, and North Carolina is a better team when Nasir Little is a better player. I think that they will win this. I think it's going to be the best game of Saturday. I'm glad we're starting with this. From leading into the weekend, that's the one, as you mentioned, with the two ranked teams and sitting well in the polls. It's the most anticipated one of the weekend. But I think there's a great shot this will be a close game throughout. One stat to throw at you.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville, I think, has played better than its record. I don't care what Bill Parcells' famous quote is, "You are what your record says you are." That's fine. Credit to Chris Mack and that staff. They've done a great job. Headed toward the NCAA tournament. Awesome season. Jordan Nwora has been a standout player. But they don't really have in my opinion, they don't have a star. Like, Nwora's averaging 18-8. He's had a good season. But I think why Louisville's been able, at least a significant factor in why they've been able to get to this 16-5 mark, is they're not only good at their foul shots, they get to the foul line a lot. So they rank top 20 nationally in free throw percentage, shooting about 76%. And more than 23% of their points overall come from made foul shots. So we'll see if North Carolina gets duped into that. They're not particularly a team that is overly foul prone. And because they don't have a ton of big men, I mean, they've got May, Garrison Brooks, Cam Johnson, if you want to qualify him that. Like, they've got dudes who are who are, you know, 6'8", 6'9", but they're not overloaded in the front court. And sometimes you'll see teams that are be more prone to foul rates. UNC isn't that, so I think we'll have a fun, free-flowing game. And I don't know what Louisville's free throws per game average is, but whatever the over-under is on that, I'm going under.
It's just unfortunate. We're here first weekend of February, and Leaky Black is unavailable, just like Tekashi 6'9".
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
You don't know Tekashi 6'9"? He's in federal prison right now.
I'm out to lunch on that, my man.
You don't know 6'9"? He's that little bitty rapper who was – I wouldn't know him. Like, I'm not trying to sound hipper than I am. I wouldn't know him, except he was, like, on TMZ basically every day, just, like, talking crazy about everybody. Like, he's going to shoot this person, and this person's going to get shot. And then, like, one of his boys tries to shoot Chief Keep. He's, like, on TMZ talking wild every day. And then the feds busted him, and he's, like, facing life in prison now for all sorts of wild stuff, racketeering and – I don't know what the actual, like, specific charges are, but, like, there's a he's facing, like, a million charges. He put out this album and went straight to number one. It's got Nicki Minaj on it. I think Kanye's on one of the tracks. And now he's, like, going to be in – I don't know if he's going to be in jail forever, but he's in jail, like, now and has been for a while, and now Leaky Black can't play.
Those are two things, yes. Those are two things. I don't know
Maybe Leaky Black can get healthy. And 6ix9ine can get out of prison, and then they can tour together.
You tell me there's a short rapper who also goes by 6ix9ine?
Yes, he's little bitty. He's like smaller than – he's, like, shorter than me. It probably weighs, like, 120 pounds. Little bitty dude.
Okay. Well.
Look him up. Look him up in your free time. Tekashi 6ix9ine. Real name, Daniel Hernandez. He's from Brooklyn, New York City.
You never know what you're going to learn on this podcast. Any thoughts on Carolina Louisville, Parrish?
Not really.
Okay.
But have you noticed Louisville's next four games? This is tough, man.
Yes. Listen, this is in the court report. Of course. It's a whole subsection. I don't expect you to read it. I'm not expecting you to read it, but it was noted in this week's court report. They've got a brutal four-game stretch here. Lay it out for the people.
For anybody who might have missed it, so they got North Carolina at home on Saturday. Then it's at number 12, Virginia Tech, at number 25, Florida State, and then against Duke at home. If you're Chris Mack, you take nothing less than 4-0. He's just wired that way. If you're a normal wired person, what would you accept from Louisville in these next four games?
2-2. You know it. Two home, two away. Florida State's not as good as if we thought it once was. Virginia Tech is a good team that actually does not have a lot of greatness on its resume. Its top-tier wins are not as good as other teams that are in that top 15, top 20 range in the polls. It's weird. Your two easiest opponents come on the road. Your two toughest ones come at home. So 2-2, maybe you split. Maybe you also split the home and road tilts there.
I'm with you. I think if you're a Louisville fan, you'd be perfectly happy with 2-2. And anything better than that is obviously amazing. Let's go on. Number 7, Kentucky at Florida. Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN. UK is on a 7-game winning streak. Florida, 3-1 in its past four games. Gators just beat Ole Miss the other night in overtime. Florida's only 12-8 overall, 4-3 in the SEC, but still 31st at KenPom. So the computers love them for some reason. You taking Kentucky on the road, or are you terrified of the O-Dome?
No one's terrified of the O-Dome. Okay.
What? What?
Get out of
here. Nobody's terrified of the O-Dome?
The O-Dome, there's no fear with the O-Dome. Now, listen, is it a fine venue? It is a fine venue. I don't dispute that. But it's not, people walk into the O-Dome all the time, I have to remind you. Florida got a necessary win earlier this week. It needed that victory, and it got it against Ole Miss, which is going the wrong way. Since we brought up Ole Miss on the podcast, by the way, it's not been a good situation for Kermit Davis' team. We'll see if they can get back into the fold there. I think KenPom likes Florida more than any other computer that you referenced. They were 38 in the Massey Composite heading into this week, but KenPom is buying in on them at 31. I'll take them to win here. It's probably not going to be a visually stimulating game. Florida's going to want to slow it down severely. We'll see what Kevon Allen can get hot overall. Andrew Nembhard is a name that almost no one knows in college basketball unless you're a Florida fan, but he is one of the tallest point guards and really one of the better distributing point guards at this stage in college hoops. You know, he's not a top 10 point guard by any means, but if he, I think he was a top 30 prospect. He was definitely a top 40 prospect. So he came in and was, you know, expected to be a difference maker right away. I want to see how he does in this one matched up on Ashton Hagans, who's been terrific, and we've noted him on previous podcasts. So in this specific game, I'm actually most intrigued by the Nembhard Hagans head-to-head. I'll take Florida to win. Who are you taking?
I'm going to go with Kentucky on the road. And you know how I feel about the O-Dome, so you can understand how difficult this is for me to do, but they're really playing well right now. And some of it's got to do with Ashton Hagans. He's just been a difference maker on both ends of the court, especially the defensive end of the court. But P.J. Washington's playing the best basketball of his college career. He had 21-6 against Mississippi State, 20-13 against Kansas, 26-12 against Vanderbilt. In that three-game stretch, shooting 53% from the field, 50% from three. Before this three-game stretch, he had never at Kentucky, so that counts last season and this season, he had never scored at least 20 points in consecutive games. And now he's done it in three straight games. So he's really playing well right now. That's among the reasons Kentucky is playing well right now. And since the Duke game, and we've noted this before, Kentucky's 17-2, and the two losses are combined by a combined 3 points. So they could very reasonably be sitting here at 19-1 with the lone loss to Duke. John Calipari's got them playing, and we talked about this in the last podcast, the way close to what they were supposed to be. I don't know that they'll ever get the number one in the rankings again like they were in the CBS Sports Top 25-1 in the preseason, but it does appear that when we get ready on Selection Sunday to start talking about teams that can realistically cut down nets in Minneapolis, Kentucky's going to be on that list. I think they'll win this weekend.
Okay, so we split. That's good. We, by the way, got word that multiple people have been tracking our picks this season, so thank you. Keep it up, and we are guaranteed to forget where exactly we stand, but I mentioned that, I think, one or two podcasts ago. It's insane that we had the same record this far into the season, but we split here, and you're going to turn your back on the O-Dome. Completely reasonable.
Yeah, I feel like I'm cheating on the O-Dome a little bit, but I got to do what I got to do. Kentucky's fan will get more aggravated if I – Kentucky's fan base is more likely to tweet me nonstop if I pick Florida and Kentucky wins than if I pick Kentucky and Florida wins. So go Big Blue, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And if I didn't make it clear on the North Carolina-Louisville game, I'm also taking North Carolina on the road. And I know it makes no sense given that – these teams have played once. They played in Chapel Hill, and Louisville beat their brains in, but that's the way college basketball works. Like, it'd be a very normal college basketball thing for the team that got its brains beat in at home by the other team to go then beat the other team on the road. Another big game this weekend. Texas Tech is at Kansas. That's number 16 Texas Tech at number 11 Kansas. Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, you can watch it on CBS. That's America's most watched network. It's America's most awarded network. It's the network of stars. Kansas is just 4-4 since Udoka Azubuike was lost for the season. Just 1-3 in its past four games. And a loss here would drop Kansas to 5-4 in the Big 12 heading into Tuesday's game at Kansas State. In other words, Jayhawks lose this one, they really might be staring at 5-5 in the Big 12 by this time next week. You're taking Kansas inside Fog Allen or Texas Tech on the road?
I'm taking Kansas straight up, and I'm taking Texas Tech. I think the expectation, we logged our picks. We pick some games for you over at CBSSports.com every Friday. They publish late Friday, so check that out if you want to fade us or ride with us. And I took Tech to cover here, took Kansas to win straight up. This is Parrish. This is it. This is the game right here for me. If Kansas drops this, I don't know if I can turn my back on my stance about picking them to win the Big 12 the way that you scorned the O-Dome a few minutes ago, but got to win this game because you mentioned the road tilt coming after that at the Octagon of Doom on Tuesday, February 5th. So I will take the Jayhawks to eke this one out. But Texas Tech, which no longer rates as the best per-possession defense in college basketball, it's now third, trailing, just barely, but trailing Michigan and Virginia. We'll see if that defense steps up and pulls one out here. We'll see if anyone can help out Dedrick Lawson, Vic Dotson, Grimes, Ochai Agbaji, Marcus Garrett. Anybody want to pick up a phone? KJ Lawson hasn't really been much of a factor like his brother. So we'll see. I'll take the Jayhawks, and I think this is the second most likely game to be terrific on Saturday, just behind UNC Louisville.
I don't want to get hyperbolic, but I think you're exactly right. Like, this is a big game in the sense that if Kansas wins it, you go, okay, they haven't been good without Doak, but they just knocked out Texas Tech. They're still going to be very difficult to deal with inside Fog Allen. If they lose this one, though, and they drop to 5-4, that put them two games back in the loss column of first place. And more than that, it would drop them to below 500 since they lost their starting center. I do think if they lose this game, that will be the point where I say I don't think that their string of Big 12 titles is going to continue. I think it'll be a reasonable thing to say at that point. And it has been reasonable to say at other points in other years, and then they make up the ground. And perhaps that's what they would do here too. I'm not ruling anything out. But at this moment, I will still say I think Kansas wins at least a share of the Big 12 title. They lose at home to Texas Tech on Saturday, I'll move off that. But I don't think they're going to lose at home to Texas Tech on Saturday. They're 11-0 inside Allen Fieldhouse this season. And even though they've been very average without Udoka Azubuike, they did beat Iowa State, who has been very good without Udoka Azubuike. And Texas Tech is just 2-2 in road games. So I'll take Kansas at home, but I don't feel great about it, but I will take Kansas at home.
All right. What's next?
Indiana at number 6, Michigan State, at Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN. And Michigan State's coming off that loss at Purdue. And by the way, I don't think we referenced it on the podcast. I think it happened before the last podcast, maybe not. Josh Langford is now officially done for the season. Michigan State coming off a loss at Purdue. Meantime, Indiana is on a 7-game losing streak. How do you explain that? Let's just before we're both picking Michigan State. Obviously, we're not going to take.
Are
Michigan
we?
if you got the whatever it takes to take a team on a 7-game losing streak to win at Michigan State, knock yourself out. I'm going to assume you're not going to do that. Let's focus on Indiana for a second. How do you explain the 7-game losing streak? I mean, look, we got a talented roster with a talented coach. How are they on a 7-game that beat Marquette early in the year? That beat Louisville early in the year? It's not like Indiana got off to this nice start, ranked in the top 25 because they beat nobody. They beat good teams early. Both those games were at home, and both those games were close, but they are both Indiana wins. The Marquette win, oh, that one wasn't close. I got it. It had something backwards. It was 96-73. So they beat Marquette, which is now like a borderline top 10 team. Beat them by 23 points. And then after that, that was the close game. They went to Arkansas and barely lost because of that stupid last possession. Mm-hmm. They got blasted at Duke, but then they beat Louisville. This one was close. 68-67 at home. And they're at one point 12-2 overall, 3-0 in the Big Ten, ranked in the top 25. And it's just been garbage ever since. How do you make sense of this?
The classic Paris just now, by the way. Like, asks me the question. I start to answer, and then he hops in and gives you another minute worth of exposition.
Yeah, I really didn't want you to talk. I just wanted to pretend like I did, and then I wanted to explain things.
5 of the past 7 games, all losses have come on the road. That's part of it. One of the home games was against one of the 3 or 4 best teams in college basketball in Michigan. The other home game was against a Nebraska team that at the time was healthy and now has lost Isaac Copeland for the season. It has never been this bad for Archie Miller. This is by far the worst losing streak of his career, and they do not have enough around Langford and Morgan. Langford, you want him to be a little bit better of a three-point shooter. You watch him. You want him to occasionally make a little bit of a better decision. But overall, he's still been one of the 5 best freshmen in college basketball this season. That's a bar that is completely reasonable that he has cleared. And I find very little of this to be on his shoulders. Juwan Morgan as a senior, still, when I watch Indiana play, and I've seen them plenty amid this streak, there are still moments in games where I see Morgan kind of carrying his load for the most part. He's a fairly efficient player, good on both ends, and a particularly opportunistic rebounder. But everyone else around him, both those guys, you know, Miller called him soft. I don't disagree with that at all. They don't get stops on key possessions when teams are potentially ready to break a game open. They just kind of fold. It's really weird. And now you're just fighting to get into the NIT. I mean, they went from being in the top 25 of the AP poll on January 20th to now it's 10, 11 days from that. They're on a 7-game losing streak. They're skidding out. And you know, they face Michigan State. The line is going to be somewhere, I would think, around 15 points. And I'm taking Indiana to cover, by the way. I'll take Indiana to cover even if it was 10 points. I think they're going to show up and play their spirited game, but lose nonetheless. But it's not good for Archie Miller, and you have a season here in which, and I can't pull off all these names off the top of my head, but Nerlens Noel, who was injury influenced, obviously, is one that comes to mind. You have a tremendous player on campus, a one and done, and this is going sideways and not the way any Indiana fan hoped. Think about how jubilant that state and that fan base was back in April of last year when Lankford committed, and to where it is today, it's shocking. It really is.
I mean, you really do end up wasting the Romeo Lankford season that you looked forward to literally for years. I mean, to put some names with it, it's like Ben Simmons at LSU. It's like Markel Fultz at Washington.
Those aren't – you're right, Parrish, but those schools are not annually expected. You're right, but like at Indiana, you think we're Indiana and we have Romeo Lankford. Like there's almost no shot this isn't going to go fairly decently. Well, here's the shot where it doesn't. That's all.
Right. Way back a long time ago, John Calipari's second team at Memphis had DeJuan Wagner. You know, number one guard in the country, they go to the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just like, and that was similar to Indiana in the sense that they were supposed to be good, and they had a roster that said they should be good, and then just you waste the one Wani Wags year, and now it looks like Indiana's on a track to waste the one Romeo Lankford year. I do think that you pointed out something that's important for the purposes of context. Five of the seven losses are on the road. Given that this next game against Michigan State, also on the road, they're in a stretch right now where six games in an 8-game stretch are road games. That seems weird. And then five of these losses are against top 25 KenPom teams. So that's not to excuse it. If you're a legitimate top 25-like team, you're not supposed to lose seven in a row. I don't care what league you're in. I don't care what the schedule looks like. I don't care where you're playing games. But I guess the details aren't nearly as bad as just a surface level 7-game losing streak. Either way, they're fading. They were 16th at KenPom on November 18th. They're 47th at KenPom right now. And if you got these kinds of issues, like Michigan State ain't the place where you try to get them fixed, I don't think. I did in our official picks at CBSSports.com also take Indiana to cover, but I don't think Indiana's going to win. So when it goes to bet on this team goes to bed on Saturday night, they will almost certainly be 12-10 overall, 3-8 in the Big Ten, and taking an 8-game losing streak into next Thursday's home game against Iowa. That'll be followed by a home game against Ohio State, then at Minnesota, home against Purdue, at Iowa, home against Wisconsin, home against Michigan State, okay, at Illinois.
All right, Parrish, you're just reading off their schedule.
And then let me run through their projected Big Ten tournament games
okay,
as well.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And playing on that Wednesday, I don't have any idea.
You got Archie Miller's itinerary for April in there?
What?
So you got Archie Miller's itinerary for April in there as well you want to get to?
Yeah, I want to go ahead and say he's going to be at the that event in Arkansas.
Okay. Arkansas. Hey, real quick. We're not going to get into like breaking down these games, but I want this on the record before they happen. So recording this Friday morning. Friday night, there are two Big Ten games.
Michigan, you know I hate talking about Friday
I don't
night
care. Games. Michigan's going to lose at Iowa. I'm putting it on the record. Okay, Michigan's going to lose at Iowa. That's going to happen. And then Maryland's going to – we talk about skidding teams. Maryland's going to lose at Wisconsin. They're going to have dropped three of their past four. So I'm just laying that out there, helping out the listeners there. Just watch Michigan fall into Iowa Friday night.
I refuse to pick Friday night games.
Okay, you don't have to. I'm not asking you to pick. I'm just telling you that that's what's going to happen.
I'm taking a principled stance.
Okay.
I might go against the O-Dome in the middle of a podcast, but I will not compromise myself and pick a Friday night game on a Friday morning podcast.
That's fine. One of your weirder stances, I respect it.
I got trivia time coming up, so don't leave us yet. But before we go any further, I want to thank you guys for subscribing to the Eye on College Basketball podcast via Apple Podcasts. The numbers are up in every way. We notice, our bosses notice. So thank you guys for making this the biggest college basketball podcast in the country. And to those of you who haven't done it yet, please get on that. It only takes a minute. Go subscribe via Apple Podcasts. Rate it favorably. 5 stars and nice comments are preferred and appreciated. I thank you in advance. Norlander, it's trivia time.
Oh, boy. I have no idea what's coming. Go ahead. Fire it at me.
That's what she said. I looked this up a few weeks back for some reason. Did you know that 6 of the past 7 national champions have finished top 11 in both offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency?
Hold on.
Did you know?
Yeah. Well, hold on. You know what? Yes, Parrish, but have you done what needs to be done in order to ask this question properly?
I don't know. I don't know what you mean.
Are you looking at where they finished in offensive and defensive efficiency after the NCAA tournament was over? Because when you play 4, 5, 6 really good teams and you win the national championship, one hand feeds the other. Of course, you're going to bump up. You need to see where those teams rated before they played an NCAA tournament game.
I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Well, that's the proper way to evaluate this, but continue anyway. I messed up trivia time last time. Now you've kind of stepped in it here. Let's have some fun.
I have not messed up trivia time. I acknowledge that if you go and win 6 games in the NCAA tournament, your efficiency numbers are almost certainly, definitely, going to be better than they otherwise would have been. Do you know what? I'll ask you. Do you know how to look up where they were at the end of the regular season?
Yes.
Oh. Well, then you should have done that.
Okay. I'm gonna walk you through this here. Parrish, I talked to Ken Pomeroy on the phone this week, by the way, and he's an occasional listener of the podcast. Thank you, Ken. We appreciate this. If you want to, I'm gonna give the endorsement of his site since Parrish brings it up like 15 times on a podcast. KenPom.com. It's only $19.99 per season. It really is. I'm not joking here. And please don't do this, Ken, but he could charge like $99 a season for this, and I think he'd keep his subscription rate above 50% and make a lot more money because there are so many people that I feel use this that are not even just in the media. I feel like he has hit the ultimate mainstream, so I told him I'd give him a little bit of a shout-out there and kind of break the tradition of GP doing this. But here's what you got to do, Parrish. Mm-hmm. Go to every – I know you got the page up in front of you right now, okay?
I always have the page up in front of me.
In fact, I want to try and do a podcast this season where you do not have Ken Pom on your screen when we record. Can you do that?
I mean, I could do it, but I don't want to. That's not the way I want to live my life.
All right. So click on the 2018 season for me.
Done.
You see it says Ken Pom Pomeroy basketball ratings?
Sure.
And you see data?
Yep.
And you see final and you see pre-tourney.
I do see pre-tourney.
There you go.
Yeah, but then I have to download something.
It downloads the stats for you. I'm just telling you, it's as simple as that. Anyway, we've got a trivia time to get to here, so why don't you throw it at me?
Trivia time. There are 3 teams right now that rank in the top 11 in both offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. Can you name them?
Okay, I will not cheat on this. I know 2 of them because I was looking at it like a week ago. So Michigan State is 1, Virginia is 2, and I'm going to guess that Duke is the 3rd.
Damn it, you got it exactly right.
Yeah, what can I do here?
How is it possible you knew the answer to my questions but didn't know the answers to your own question earlier this week?
Seems almost impossible, really. it's just ridiculous. There's no reason why that
should be. How can you answer my questions but can't answer your own?
I know. I don't get that, by the way.
Okay, you ready for this? Bonus trivia time!
Okay.
There are 5 more teams right now that are in the top 25 in both offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. Can you name them?
So you expanded this out? Interesting.
Just in case I wanted bonus trivia time.
Okay. I'll say Tennessee.
Surprisingly, not 1. They're 3rd in offensive efficiency, 30th in defensive efficiency.
Okay. 5 teams, you're saying?
That are top 25 in both. in addition to Duke, Virginia, and Michigan State.
All right, Virginia.
So there's a total of eight schools that are top 25 in both. Duke, Virginia, Michigan State are three of them.
Virginia Tech.
No.
Oh,
Virginia Tech is seventh in offensive efficiency, 50th in defensive efficiency.
Okay. North Carolina.
Yes. 12 in offensive efficiency, 13th in defensive efficiency.
Kentucky.
Kentucky, yes. 17th in offensive efficiency, 9th in defensive efficiency.
And Wisconsin.
Wisconsin is not. Wisconsin is 32nd in offensive efficiency, 5th in defensive efficiency.
I know it's not Gonzaga because they're not good enough on defense.
Two of them are playing each other this weekend.
Okay. For real, though, Texas Tech qualifies because Kansas was going to be my other guess.
Neither Kansas nor Texas Tech.
So Louisville.
It's Louisville, North Carolina. That's two of them.
North Carolina, 12th
in offensive efficiency, 13th in defensive efficiency. Louisville, 13th in offensive efficiency, 24th in defensive efficiency. And you got one more left out there.
Easy guess or no?
I'll give you three guesses, and I don't think you'll get it.
Really? So not that easy of a guess. You know what? How about Buffalo?
It is not Buffalo. Buffalo is 27th in offensive efficiency, so very close, 17th in defensive efficiency.
Is it from a multi-bid conference?
Probably not.
Ooh, probably not. Probably not. Probably not a multi-bid conference.
I mean, maybe a multi-bid conference.
Okay, so how are we thinking? I don't think they'd be good enough. Murray State?
It is not Murray State. Murray State is, I don't know where Murray State is. I got it right here. Murray State's 37th offensive efficiency and 98th defensive efficiency.
Probably not.
You got one more guess.
Multi-bid. Okay.
Maybe. I haven't looked at Jerry Palm's latest bracket. The league is sometimes a multi-bid league, but is down this season.
So that makes me think A-10, but unless you're saying Nevada. It's got to be Nevada. Is that my blind spot?
It's Nevada.
Okay, yeah. All right.
24th in offensive efficiency, 22nd in defensive efficiency.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Hey, this has been fun. I suggested a segment that would have been done in a shorter amount of time. We can still do it right now if you want to do it.
I didn't do the homework assignment once we decided not to do it.
Oh, gosh. Why don't you just do it off the top of your head?
Because I'm not good off the top of my head.
Okay, we got something good coming for you next week. We didn't want to include. I did want to include on this podcast.
You did include it. What it is Norlander selected a handful of schools, and we are going to predict what their seed, not what it would be right now, but what it will be on Selection Sunday, and then we're just going to leave them alone and then return to them on Selection Sunday and see how right or wrong we were. I thought because we had so many games to talk about this weekend that would be better served on a Wednesday podcast because there's usually very little that's happened between Sunday night and Wednesday morning. I mean, there's games and stuff, but that's the podcast where we are searching for topics to talk about. So I figured we'd be better off just putting it right there, right? That's
sure. One more question: Where does Wofford rank right now? Just out of curiosity.
Oh my God, the freaking Terriers! They're 38th at KenPom. They are 18-4 overall. They are 16th efficiency, 103rd in defensive efficiency. If you could beat them, at their place in Spartanburg, that's going to count as a quadrant one win. Seems pretty clear right now.
And they are 31st in the net, which means they are also on a neutral, a quad one win. So, and they are one spot away from if you beat them at home, if you beat them on your own home floor, your floor, Wofford comes into your building and you beat them, it's quad one win parish.
I'm not inviting Wofford into my floor. Are you out of your mind? I'm not getting involved in that.
Listen, on this podcast, we sometimes talk about camel fighting. We sometimes talk about leaky black. And now we are always going to talk about Wofford's rating.
Shout to the Terriers. Shouts to the Terriers. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. And like I said, please go subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rate it favorably. 5-star nice comments. That's all I've ever asked from you. Please do that. And we will talk to you again early Sunday. And that's because there's not much going on Sunday except for the Super Bowl. And I'm hosting a Super Bowl party at Fitz in Tunica with Jerry the King Lawler. And so I got to get down to Tunica middle of the afternoon. So we will record. Let's just be transparent. What do we decide on? Going to try to record around noon Eastern, right?
That's right. We'll record noon Eastern. We're going to go ahead and presume that Nova's not going to lose at home to Georgetown. Even if it does, well, we'll get to that on the next podcast. And then we'll have it ready for you. If you want to squeeze it in before the Super Bowl, you can do that. If not, it's waiting for you for your morning commute. I know some people like to have that then. But we'll get it. This is an extremely early one. But we normally, you know, the longtime podcast listeners know that this is almost always the case. We record very early before the Super Bowl. So we'll get that out for you well in time before the game.
What I would encourage you to do is go ahead and subscribe. And then it'll get sent right to your phone. And then when you have people over to watch the Super Bowl, you can mute it. You guys can watch the Super Bowl, but then just listen to the Ion College Basketball podcast, and that'll be like you'll be the star of the party, I'm certain.
Yeah. I want someone to actually try that video and send it to us, see how that goes.
Yeah, get video of that. Hey, put a secret camera at your Super Bowl party when you mute it, like right during the
kickoff. The kickoff. Hey, guys, hold on. I got to mute this.
I'm going to mute this, and
we're going to hear about camel fighting.
Yeah, Parrish and Norlander have a podcast where they sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. So if you don't mind, we're going to watch the Patriots and Rams, but we'll knock this podcast out. It's only 45 minutes. Video the reaction from your Super Bowl party, and we'll link it somewhere, I promise. We're going to talk to you again on Sunday. Let's get out of here. Till then, take care.